Elderly people are most susceptible to the coronavirus. What states and local authorities are doing to protect them?
Broward County, which is the epicenter in Florida, the governor instituted an order that there would be no visitation allowed at nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and similar type places in that county.
Plus, why another rates cut did close to nothing to ease fears on Wall Street.
They're really waiting for a bigger response from the U.S. government in terms of fiscal spending.
It is Monday, March 16th. I'm Janet Babin in New York for The Wall Street Journal. Here's what's news. President Trump issued new guidelines today to slow the spread of the coronavirus.
We'd much rather be ahead of the curve than behind it, and that's what we are. Therefore, my administration is recommending that all Americans, including the young and healthy, work to engage in schooling from home when possible, avoid gathering in groups of more than 10 people, avoid discretionary travel, and avoid eating and drinking at bars, restaurants, and public food courts.
A number of states and local authorities have already implemented many of these measures. More than 30 million school kids are already staying home. But some areas are restricting movement even more sharply. San Francisco became the first major U.S. city today to order residents to stay at home, except for essential needs. Other countries are also responding with stricter measures. French President Emmanuel Macron has announced a nationwide lockdown, requiring people to stay home and avoid contact with others. Local elections there that were scheduled for Sunday have been canceled. In a historic move, the Supreme Court has canceled its March hearing schedule to avoid spreading the virus. In a statement, the court says they've done it before. The last time was more than 100 years ago, in October 1918, in response to the Spanish flu. Wall Street Journal reporter Jess Braven.
The practical impact means that initially, the cases that were going to be argued later in March will have to be rescheduled for argument at a later time. And some of these cases have fairly significant impact, most particularly three cases involving President Trump's financial records, which have been subpoenaed by House committees and a grand jury in New York State.
The National Institutes of Health says the first human testing of an experimental vaccine against this new coronavirus has already begun in Seattle. The vaccine was developed by federal scientists and the Massachusetts drug company Moderna. But the NIH says the testing is still expected to take a year to 18 months to complete. U.S. airlines are scrambling to make deep cuts to their schedules to cut costs as bookings continue to plunge due to the pandemic. Now, the carriers are asking the federal government for some financial aid, at least $50 billion worth. We report the aid could include government-backed loans, cash grants, and other measures, including relief from taxes and fees. The talks are still ongoing. And to keep up with higher demand for delivery, Amazon says it's planning to hire an additional 100,000 warehouse employees in the U.S. and is raising pay for workers in fulfillment centers by $2 an hour through April. Over the weekend, the Federal Reserve unveiled a series of measures to try and stabilize the economy, including slashing its benchmark interest rate to near zero. But that didn't stop stocks from falling sharply today. The Dow dropped about 3,000 points, or nearly 13%. The S&P 500 and the NASDAQ both lost about 12%. Here to discuss where things stand is Wall Street Journal reporter Amrith Ramkumar. Amrith, hey, how's it going?
I'm doing okay, hanging in there. How about you?
Same. So what happened today? Where are we?
Today was the latest example, really, of investors grappling with this idea that central bank actions can't really save the economy from the coronavirus. We're seeing so many parts of the global economy shut down, school closures, people working from home, etc., that this fear that's really permeating throughout society is being represented in markets. A lot of analysts said the Fed did all it could really over the weekend, leaving the central bank with little action should the situation get much worse. And they're really waiting for a bigger response from the U.S. government in terms of fiscal spending and other actions that are more targeted to really support some of these companies that are taking a beating here.
trading stopped automatically earlier today, soon after the stock market opened here in the U.S., and that didn't help at all. What happened after that?
Yeah, we've seen that happen several times during the recent volatility, where it's a circuit breaker when the S&P 500 hits a 7% decline. And the disruptions actually started before that, in Sunday evening futures trading here in New York, where futures fell 5%, and that's a limit down where futures trading stops a bit after that. And so these are, again, examples of the disjointed trading that's causing a lot of volatility and really angst among investors who don't know where markets are going to go next. We saw a nearly 10% rebound or so on Friday, then all of that gain gets wiped out today, and people are grappling with the idea that this could drag on for months now, all of these disruptions.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, any guess as to what will happen tomorrow when the markets reopen?
It's really anyone's guess. The Fed's action came at 5 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, and some people seem to think that would boost stock futures an hour later at 6 p.m. Eastern time, and instead they fell 5% to hit that limit down I was referring to earlier. So people are having a lot of trouble kind of weighing all of these signals. And it's important to remember that at the same time, we have this price war between Saudi Arabia and Russia, the world's biggest energy exporters, and that's causing a huge crash in oil prices, which is bad for the energy sector, and that chaos is rippling through the corporate bond market, which is another sign of unease. So people are struggling to kind of find signs of optimism in all of this, I would say.
Are you getting a sense that regulators are grappling with or considering what other measures, perhaps measures they've never taken before? Anything in the works? A new fangled angle, perhaps?
Yeah, I really think governments and central banks around the world are really having to contemplate that again, because this idea that you can't have gatherings of 10 people, and we're seeing again restaurants, bars, etc., close in so many places, and anything related to travel and transportation is getting hammered as well. I think they are having to consider those, and investors are definitely hoping for those, but the fact that they're not really tangible yet, and people aren't really sure about the data, and they're kind of having to guess at how widespread the virus is in some places. It's all the uncertainty is really taking on a life of its own.
Okay. Wall Street Journal reporter Amrith Ramkumar will be looking for your reporting throughout the week. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
COVID-19 appears to be hardest on people over 60. One of the first places the outbreak surfaced in the U.S. was in an elderly facility in the Seattle area, where more than 400 people were affected and more than 30 died. And that's injected a strong dose of fear into elderly communities across the country, especially in states with higher populations of older people, like Maine and Florida, where Wall Street Journal reporter Arian Campo Flores has been reporting on the elderly population there and on the people who serve them. Arian, hi, and welcome to What's News.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, how is this increased fear manifesting in these vulnerable populations? What are you hearing?
You know, the fear is manifesting itself in different ways. When it comes to nursing homes and assisted living facilities and the like, there's a great concern there among the folks who operate these facilities and, you know, loved ones of patients in them, because of what you saw in a place like the Seattle area, and because of the impact that coronavirus has on the elderly population. So that's where they're implementing a lot of measures to really police the amount of people and who is getting access to them. If you're talking about places like, you know, retirement communities where people are relatively healthy, it's kind of a different attitude there. They're definitely introducing a lot of measures to reduce social interaction, but folks are trying to keep some semblance of their normal lives in place.
And Arian, are most of them on lockdown? No visitors allowed?
It depends on the facilities. But for instance, Broward County, which is the epicenter in Florida of these cases, it's the county that has the highest number. The governor instituted an order that there would be no visitation allowed at nursing homes, assisted living facilities, and similar type places in that county. And then he also has an executive order that significantly limits who can visit other nursing homes and similar facilities around the state. So they are in as close to a lockdown state, if not fully in lockdown, depending on where they are.
We've heard from our reporting in New York that many people who care for these elderly people are very concerned about shortages of hand sanitizer and masks. Is that a problem there too?
There is concern about that here as well. The facilities that I spoke to and the associations that represent them say that they are well stocked and that they were jumping on this early to ensure that they had enough masks and protective equipment and disinfectants and hand sanitizer and the like. But there are definitely concerns about whether there is enough and whether that's going to run out. And so on some of the regular conference calls that are held with these facilities on which there are state officials, they have said, you know, if you are concerned about this, get in touch with either your local county health department or with the state about trying to fill any gaps in your inventory.
And we've talked a lot about people in facilities, but I'm thinking there must be a large elderly population there that is homebound.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that is one of the concerns that was raised by the state director of AARP Florida, who I spoke with. He was really concerned about that particular population that is sort of semi-independent, living on their own, but, you know, dependent perhaps on going to a particular senior center for some services or receiving meals on wheels. And so that was something that I think is still being resolved, still being addressed, because that is a group of people that that, you know, depends on the help of others and depends on going to places. And there's a concern about that social interaction that would happen.
I'm just curious if you got an understanding about how people are keeping their spirits up, or are they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, so what they, one of the things that they've encouraged for, you know, friends and family of people who are in facilities that may be under some form of a lockdown or with restricted visitation, is to just maintain that contact with them through Skype or through phone calls or just through apps that allow them to keep that interaction up with their loved ones.
Ariane Campoflores, thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
Back in January, when the coronavirus outbreak began in Wuhan, China, the country got a lot of questions about what seemed to be really draconian measures, like shutting down all flights and public transport, all shops and factories, and enforcing mandatory 14-day quarantines. At the time, some residents decided to flee the country altogether and jumped on flights to the U.S. and Europe. Now, the cases in China are subsiding. The World Health Organization is saying that Europe is the new epicenter, and governments there are being criticized for not acting quickly enough and not imposing strong enough measures to contain the virus. Some Chinese citizens living internationally have decided that the safest place to be is actually in China. Our reporter Stu Wu has more from Beijing on what they can expect as they head back home.
While China might seem safer than many other places in the world right now, things aren't back to normal. Traffic's still much lighter than normal. I would say in Beijing, where I am, only about a third to half of the restaurants and shops are open again. And Beijing has some really interesting rules. Offices have to limit how many people can be in the office, 25 to 50% is a normal number. And the other thing right now is that they're actually targeting not other people within China as potential virus carriers, but they're really focusing now on people coming in from other countries.
China said on Sunday that travelers coming into the capital will have to quarantine at specially designated sites for 14 days before they can go out into Beijing. And with so many people working from home now, you might be running into roadblocks and tech challenges. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, is ready to help. If you have a question or suggestion, you can email her at joanna.stern@wsj.com. Or you can call the phone number in the description and leave us a message. And that's What's News for this Monday afternoon. If you like our show, please review it and rate it wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Janet Babin for The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.